Hello, hello, hello. This is Who the Fuck Knows with Emily Rose. I'm Emily Rose, and I am welcoming back today a fan favorite of the pod, a internet friend of mine, and someone whose podcast I was on Patreon episode yesterday discussing another episode of the works of one Sheena Marie Shea. Today, we will be doing the same thing, but before we get into it, hi, Rob, how are you doing?
Good. Hello. Thanks for having me again and continuing this journey into Sheena's acting career. It's been a lot of fun.
It is. It is. I can't wait to talk about all of it. So today, guys, we are going to be talking about Sheena's episode on the show Jonas,
yes,
which was in 2009. It was a show, I want to say loosely based, but I don't know what was really based on any of their lives except them just being brothers. Were you familiar with the Jonas Show before we did this? Are you familiar with the Jonas Brothers?
So I was just out of like the age range for Disney at this time.
Yeah.
Like, the thing for me is that like I was never much of a Disney kid to begin with. I was more of like a Nickelodeon kid. Same. So some of that world, you know, just escaped me regardless. But in 2009, I had like just graduated college. So if I were to be tuning into a Jonas Brothers show, it was when we were like fucked up at a college party or something, right? Like,
right.
And someone going like, you know, this actually sounds kind of cool, this theme song. You know, I remember something like that happening at one point in a fuzzy memory of mine. But I knew they existed. But I think the biggest memory I have of the Jonas Brothers was that they, and I think it's because South Park made a joke about it, but like they had like purity rings or something.
Yes. They're
like, I'm saving myself till marriage. Because some reason that has something to do with being a musician, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's directly, your sex life is directly correlated with your success as an artist.
Yes.
If you know now.
and I assume that means that they're like Christian too.
Yeah.
I think Christianity is like the only religion where you're like, also, I don't do it.
Yeah. I don't get down.
No, not at all. I can rock really hard and keep Satan out of my life.
For sure. And I just monopolize people's time by ordering pizzas over and over again to get them to come to my home and interact with me unwillingly. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Christianity in a nutshell.
In a nutshell. And bad food.
That's yes. Oh, my sense. God. We will get there. Well, yeah. So Jonas, the show Jonas, from what I remember, so I was also a Nickelodeon kid, but I've been doing a lot of rewatches or watch alongs of kids shows that were, again, just out of my range as well, as far as watching TV. And so one of the biggest recappers on YouTube is Quentin Reviews, and he has been reviewing Sam and Cat, Victorious, and iCarly, which are all Nickelodeon shows. But a bunch of people have kind of branched out from his inspiration. So there is one, I believe, on Jonas. There's a Hannah Montana one. That stuff was just not, I was in high school, but I was a senior. So I was I was just a little too old for it.
Both of us were far too cool at this point in time.
Too many friends.
Yeah, it's okay. Just partying constantly.
Way too many. Yeah, I was way too edgy for this. Yeah. But I do want to, before we get into the, you know, synopsis and details on the episode, I want to know, like, what are your thoughts regarding the episode in general? Because for me, when I was watching it, I was like, it's kind of cute. I could watch it, watch a few episodes of this.
Yeah, I think that this is I'm a big fan of television, like most people. And the thing is, excuse me, too much Diet Coke. The thing about this show is that it looks like a cartoon, right?
Yeah.
And it shows like a cartoon. And I think that's always been kind of like a dream of mine since I was a kid, to be like, you know, like, wouldn't it be great to just live in a cartoon? And I think that probably means more about me and my upbringing than it does like to another person. Like, there's a fun part about cartoons, but there's also like the safety of like whatever this Jonas world is. There's a safety of a cartoon that like it resets. It's clean. It's polished. There's nothing really, no problems happening.
No stakes.
There it is. Yeah. But like you look at it and you look at the like kind of CGI'd house that they live in that looks almost like the Ghostbusters firehouse.
Yes, they've got
the poles.
Yeah.
You know, and they've got a family that doesn't really care what they do.
Yeah.
They're running the roost, as it were.
Yeah.
The dad gets kind of mad that I've got a $500 pizza bill.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's fun. It is one of those shows. And I think you posted this on Instagram that, like, you can turn your brain off to, or you can just, like, clean the house and have Jonas Brothers on.
Yes. Yes.
Sorry. Jonas.
On. Yes. If you're looking for facts about the show and you type in Jonas Brothers show, you're really fucking yourself over because it is just Jonas show. Yes. Jonas.
I had trouble finding this episode because I didn't realize that it wasn't called the Jonas Brothers.
No. Nope.
Although I will say, I recently saw Joe Jonas on another TV show. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've ever watched The Righteous Gemstones on HBO.
Okay. Yeah, is he on the new season?
He's on the second season. He's part of Eric Andre's church in Texas.
Oh.
And you know, Danny McBride's character and his wife get really obsessed because they're going to be friends with Joe Jonas.
Oh my God. I didn't watch the second season. I watched the first season, loved it, and then never got back into the second season. But if you think it's worth a watch, I might.
Yes, I binged the first and second season in like 1 week just so I could catch myself up with this third season, which is shaping up to be quite good as well.
Nice.
Yeah. But Joe Jonas plays into his silliness, I should say. He's like overtly fashionable and crazy.
They are really, I don't want to say they're really good actors. That seems like a stretch, but they are really compelling actors in the world of like Disney acting particularly, and they are primarily known as a music group. For them to kind of bring this, it's their chemistry, much like with Vanderpump Rules. The cast of Vanderpump Rules has a specific chemistry with one another that makes the show so great. Same for the Jonas Brothers. Their chemistry as brothers is, I laughed out loud a bunch of times. And
definitely giggled for sure.
Oh, yeah. Show. And then the sound design, too, with all the little, like you said, the cartoony sound effects with the pizza and at one point they pull out the Jonas Book of Law and there's all this dust and they blow the dust off. And then, you know, they are self-referential. Nick says, or Kevin says, sorry, it's all the fake dust. I don't know. Yeah.
And they look at the camera a couple of times, you know, and they like give you a winky face and finger guns and stuff. It doesn't take itself too serious, which is good because there are other, you know, shows for children that are too much, you know, or don't quite get it. Like, I think there was a Nickelodeon show recently that my buddy Tim Barnes wrote for. I believe it was called Zapped. Let me just double check this real quick.
Zapped. You said that was a Nickelodeon show.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
If it's recent, I have no
warped.
Idea.
Warped. No.
Warped. Oh.
No, Warped was the Star Trek show he worked on. Anyway, I'll just say, I'll retake this. My friend Tim Barnes worked on a Nickelodeon show that was about these kids that worked at a comic book store. And it was the same sort of humor. It's like this, but done, you know, in the Nickelodeon style. And I think when you have adults writing shows for kids, it can go one of two ways. It can go the way where it's like, you know, we're just going to be silly. We're just going to be silly. We're going to have a story. Doesn't have to be too over the top. Or it's going to be like, you think kids are dumb. And this is definitely on that side where it's like, where they don't think kids are dumb. They just recognize that kids want to have fun.
Yes. Well, with that being said, and we've kind of dived into our background in children's television.
Yes.
Let's talk about this episode. Season one of Jonas, episode three. The runtime was 23 minutes. Premiere date, May 16th, 2009, which is notable because this is 2 years before Sheena Marie, she's credited as Sheena Marie, her debut on Femme Fatales.
Oh, yes.
And I wanted to know, do you think that she fell prey to the Disney curse of needing to break out and be more adult after her stint on a Disney show?
Yeah, to an extent. I don't know how much Sheena did before this, really. Probably a little bit, but not. It was probably very low budget. And then this was a big break, right?
Yes,
this would be huge, right?
Yes.
Being on a Disney show, that's, you know,
that's a
dream.
A huge deal, yeah.
You're one step from being on The Mandalorian at this point.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But I do think that, like, she probably didn't want to be pigeonholed or say, like, I'm only going to be, like, the hot chick that the boys want to be with, like in Jonas. And of course, then she makes this next role. And we talked about it on that Patreon episode that'll be coming out soon, everyone.
Can't
at some
wait.
Point,
yeah.
It's going to be behind the Patreon paywall.
Yes.
At Vanderpump Props. But I do think there is this, like, I have the opportunity to be edgier.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to take it. And you can hear our thoughts on that, on
she
that episode.
It's pretty edgy.
It is a definite pivot from Jonas. That's for sure. To be on Femme Fatales. But then it's like Femme Fatales, like within the year that aired, they started Vanderpump Rules. So you have to think that, like, did Eddie Cibrian have something to do with this Femme Fatales episode? Like,
he probably slept with everybody on the damn show.
Well, that is true. but I wonder what you're a working actor, right? And you have to make a conscious effort to go into reality TV.
Yeah.
And it's not like Sheena's not getting roles. She's gotten at least two significant television roles at this point.
Yeah.
But you can't deny a healthy paycheck of being on a reality TV show.
Not at all. And I think that Sheena recognizes an opportunity and seizes it when she has it. And she rises to the occasion every time. What can I say?
Yeah, that's true. And we gotta remember she's wanting to be a performer at this point, too. So if this whole acting thing doesn't work out, I can at least make money on my albums.
Yeah.
Bring out.
Oh, God, I can't wait. She is my pop princess, as I
detailed
yesterday.
Yes.
So the IMDb summary for the show. The Jonas Brothers fall head over heels for the pizza girl, Maria, and after racking up a huge bill, they are banned from ordering again. In an attempt to keep order in the house, they abide by the sacred book of Jonas to not all try to go after Maria at the same time. Now, some interesting facts about the episode. It is titled Pizza Girl in the U.S., but in the U.K., it's called Slice of Life.
I like that a little bit more, quite frankly.
Me too, actually. They have the trivia of the show, the notable references that they make is a Sound of Music reference where Kevin says, how do you solve a problem like Maria? Which is just darling, in my opinion.
That one definitely made me laugh. I like that. And because it's not even like, they don't do a subtle, like, little, like, sound effect or anything like that.
It's just, if you know, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. And then in 2019, the brothers did an interview at Capitol's Summertime Ball, where they're asked if there's any music that they regret. And Joe takes the mic and says, well, when we were on the show Jonas, sometimes they would ask us to write songs for the show. And we wrote a song, Pizza Girl, that's a little weird. And he goes on to say that while he doesn't like to think that they regret any of their music, he would put Pizza Girl at the top. And I resent that from Joe. I really resent that. He said, our fans love it. And I'm like, is this a dig at Sheena? I really feel like the world is out to get this woman.
I know. It's a catchy song.
it's a catchy song.
You know, and it's like you could see a child like starting to understand the difference between like songs with intention. Like, this is a love song, you know?
Yeah. And it's really cute. There's nothing to me, the music video itself is far weirder than the contents of the song. Yes. I do have the lyrics pulled up, so we'll get there. But so I felt like that was kind of strange because they did a lot of weird shit in their early career, the purity rings being high at the top of their list. And I feel like a song about having a crush on a pizza girl really shouldn't be up there at all.
No, not at all. I mean, the weird thing about this show is the fact that it's a show about three musician brothers. Like, if we really want to dig deep into the weirdness of this, there's a lot more than them all having a crush on a pizza delivery girl.
Right. They're all in their upper teens, all living at home. Kevin, for sure, is not of age to be living at home.
No.
And they live in an abandoned firehouse, and they all have individual poles to slide down from their respective rooms. So I would say that a little weird. A little weird.
Yeah. Their parents seem to not parent either, but they go to some sort of private school that's vaguely religious, it seems, due to the, you know, outfits they have to wear.
Yeah. They had some sort of like Catholic vibes. Yeah.
Vibes for sure. And they're like best friend. I can't tell if she's their friend or not, but she like
Stella.
Stella does their like
she's
clothing.
Their tailor.
Their tailor. Mm-hmm. That's the word. She does their clothing. She's their tailor. Which, you know, more power to her. That's a usable skill to bring into the future, way more than like being a musician. It's a more realistic goal.
The trade. Yeah.
But I'm sorry, like all of these people are older than they're being portrayed on this TV show, and they somehow, you know, so I don't want to sound like a weirdo, but like they're in love with the pizza girl, yet they're surrounded by like pretty Disney people. You know,
yeah.
What? Like, at what point are they like hypnotized by Maria?
Well, let me tell you, Rob, because we get there in my episode summary, but it turns out at the end of the series, Joe and Stella end up together, as do Nick and Macy, and they have a fan couple named Nacy.
Whoa.
So this is, and again, I say it later, but it was pretty egregious of Joe to be soliciting his real life crush on advice for, it was a little bit of a Raquel move.
The lightning bolts are showing as we speak.
They are.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So we start off in the episode, all of the boys are sliding down their firehouse poles to answer the door for a pizza girl, all of which they separately ordered pizzas for themselves to see this pizza girl, Maria, played by notorious Vanderpump Rules all-star Sheena Shea. Now, she is credited in this show as Sheena Marie. She had not married Mike Shea at this point in 2009, so she's Sheena Marie.
Mm-hmm.
She comes to the door, just honestly, the lighting, the wind work, everything was stunning. It's crazy because, no offense, but she doesn't really look like that now, you know?
No.
She's still beautiful, but she just doesn't look the same.
She's grown older and wiser, and definitely, everyone talks on Vanderpump Rules about Botox and tanning and all this sort of stuff. And she's definitely not like, she doesn't look bad now, but this is a younger Sheena for sure.
Right. And so if she's 38 now, 10 years ago, she was 28. So she was like, what, 24 or 25?
I would guess somewhere around there. Yeah.
Definitely too old to be going on a date, by the way, with Nick Jonas at the very least. But that's, you know, let alone
anything. You know, maybe they thought that we thought she was like, this was her high school job or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I did. I actually had a lot of friends that worked in pizza delivery when I was in high school. So,
yeah,
you know what? Checks out, and I'm not going to...
This is like Freddie Prinze Jr., She's All That. Like, this guy's in high school?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, right. It's a little more believable.
Yeah.
So she comes to the door. All three of the boys kind of are fascinated by her. And even the dad, their dad, says something that quippy that makes the mom kind of side-eye him a little bit about her being very cute.
Yep.
And I like this a lot, and I wanted to know what you thought. So at one point, they ask her, I think actually this is the second time that they order pizza from her, but she starts talking, and her vocals fade to the background as we get like this dreamy shot of all three of the brothers looking at her. And, you know, we're led to believe that they're not even listening to her because they're just so in love with her. Now, I thought this was funny because it's a device, an editing device that is used in Vanderpump Rules for Sheena, but it's so much more malicious in Vanderpump Rules. But it really checks out because, especially the Rob Valletta years, Rob Valletta famously can hang a TV in 8 minutes, is it? Mm-hmm. 6 minutes?
Yeah.
And Sheena will go on these tangents when she's dating this guy about how much she loves him and all the things that they do together. And they, Vanderpump Rules editors more than once used a similar device where her on and on is being faded out while all of the other people's reactions to her just talking are.
Their eyes just like glaze over.
Yes.
And like she is talking, but we as the audience, it doesn't matter what she's saying because we're just like in the presence of Sheena. Now on Jonas Brothers, it's them being hypnotized by her.
Right.
Looks, I guess.
Transfixed. Yeah.
Transfixed, hypnotized. And Vanderpump Rules, it's like, okay, Sheena, we get where you're coming from. You've got a crush. You don't need to prove it to us. Let's wait until you're done talking to Rob.
And what sucks is that if you listen closely, they ask her, you know, how has your day been? And she's like, oh, since the last 12 minutes that I saw you. And she goes on this speech in which it sounds like she's had a pretty traumatic 12 minutes delivering this pizza. She had to go back and something with the oven happens. She gets a flat tire, but then she's able to get all up to their apartment in 30 seconds. And
she's good at her job.
She really is. She works. She really works. Then the dad kind of makes another quip about their intentions behind ordering the pizza. And we cut to another scene where the boys are all sitting on the couch and there's all these pizza boxes and dad, and they're talking about how they can't fit their pants, which is in, you know, foreshadowing their friend Stella, who is the tailor who has to keep making bigger pants for them because they're eating so much pizza. Now, also, we should know that Pecorello's, I think is the name of the pizza place, has really terrible pizza.
Yes.
And
they use the stuff that other people don't, I think is their phrase.
They're environmentally friendly or something.
Which just sounds like you use all the trash product.
And it's funny, too, because in keeping with a cartoony feel, right? Usually, cartoon pizza, notoriously, you're thinking of Doug or I think in a Goofy movie, there's
Ninja Turtles.
Ninja Turtles. When you get a piece of cheese pizza and the cheese is like oozing off, it is that's ideal.
Yes.
In this show, when the cheese is oozing off, it is truly like I don't know, your
rubber.
You know, rubber. It's rubber. Or like a slap band, you know, those slap bands that girls used to wear in their hair.
Snap bracelets and stuff.
Snap bracelets, yes.
God.
Man, I loved that. And I loved
the
sound.
I did
too. Oh, man.
Looked so good. It looked like, it looked good, like as in it was a good prop to look like bad pizza.
Yeah.
And by using the sound effect and by using like, you could tell they had like a spot where it's like, okay, bite here.
Yeah.
Because it ain't going to come off.
Just,
they'd stretch, you'd go back. It was a fun little gag that recurred a couple of times in the show.
And I got to say, I didn't think the pizza looked that bad.
No.
It reminded me, so I live in the city of Atlanta, and when I go back to my mom's house, which is not far from here at all, but it's still kind of suburbs, a little bit just outside the suburbs. And the only pizza places that they have where my mom lives are like your Pizza Hut or whatever. So I'd gotten a little bougie and used to a very specific kind of pizza where I would have spinach, anchovies, and mushrooms. And I tried to order that from the local Pizza Hut, and I just remember it came, and it was truly, I don't think that they even had anchovies, but it was the pizza itself and then sprinkled spinach, as if you had gotten it from like a plastic container at, you know, Kroger or whatever.
Sure.
And you sprinkle the spinach on top, and then the cheese was melted into the box, like underneath the crust. It's, and that's bad pizza.
Yeah. You're talking to someone who lived in New York for a long time as well. Oof, and so, yeah. And I hate to be like the pizza snob, but it's like once you get used to more than decent pizza, yeah. Like I grew up in the suburbs in Missouri, right? It's not like there was like a classic pizza spot. And
right.
So it was a lot of Papa John's and Pizza Hut and stuff. And then when I went off to college, there was a couple of decent spots. But then like you moved to New York and you're just like, oh shit, like I can't throw a stone without having at least decent pizza.
Yeah.
I have gone back, and of course there's a time and place for a Pizza Hut, but you can't be ordering what you order at some of those other spots. Like I guess I will take cheese or pepperoni. And
yeah,
that is what we will eat.
And cross your fingers and hope they give you the garlic butter or whatever for the crust.
Yeah, exactly. Don't forget my butter.
Right. Go ahead.
I just want, before we get to, well, maybe actually I'll save this for the end, because I have a thought that I sent to you over DM about the music in this movie, but I think I would like to save that.
We'll actually get there. I think that's great place for you to talk about this. So their dad calls them out and says that they have spent over $500 on pizza in the last month, where they all kind of have to come to an agreement that they can't. Well, they're told they can't order any more pizza. And then they're all upset and they're like, I miss her still. How are we going to commemorate her? And it goes into this Pizza Girl music video.
They're like, we can sing a song about her.
They can sing a song about her. Now, the music video itself is a whole separate thing. And a lot of times when people are looking for the episode, they'll just come up with the music video, not the full episode. I think that you probably countered that as well. But you did share a thought with me about the song. And I would like for you to elaborate on your feelings about the Disneyfication of indie rock.
Yeah, well, I think after seeing this and then going back and rewatching the opening song, right? Mm-hmm. There's Pizza Girl is its own, like, ching, ching, fell in love with the pizza. And so that's very, you know, like Shins, right? It's very like easygoing. I can do this and like play it for my girlfriend or boyfriend, and we're like on a date, we're having fun, simple guitar, simple drums, simple bass or whatever.
Kind of Cartel-ish.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, but when you compare that, or in addition to the opening theme song, which I think was Live to Party, right?
Yeah.
Live to Party is also like the band Hot Hot Heat or The Bravery. Mm-hmm. And I had sent you a message. I was like, I feel like some Disney executives were watching the video for The Bravery's An Honest Mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And were like, how can we make this for children?
Oh, yeah.
Right. And the same thing happens with a lot of, you know, not straight down the center pop music, right? For a while there was like the new metal trend, you know, you get like Limp Bizkit and Korn and all of those bands, and then you get a band like Linkin Park, right? Where they're just off center but made to be more for this mainstream audience. And of course all of those bands kind of come together, become pop in general because they get popular, but in terms of specifically saying, you know, this indie rock craze of like the early 2000s is not edgy. It's not anger music like nu metal. It's not heavy metal. It's not, you know, boy band pop. It's fashionable and it's catchy tunes. And that is a safe thing to present to kids. But maybe the subject matter of a Hot Hot Heat song, Bandages, or a Bravery song, or, you know, Franz Ferdinand or whatever, or Death Cab, like that can't be given to all ages, because you start looking into those lyrics, there's a little bit more sex, violence, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But they're like, how can we capitalize on that potential audience right now and bring them into the Disney fold? And I think that's exactly what these two songs are. You know, you've got the love song with Pizza Girl, and you've got the like high velocity, quote, rock and roll version in Live to Party. Like Live to Party even like starts with a scream. It's very interesting, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how I feel about it in terms of like big corporate fat cats trying to like, you know, homogenize a movement, but it's not like it hasn't happened time and time and time again in the music industry. It's just when Disney starts sinking its claws and stuff, it makes it its own, you know?
Well, and this was a big thing at the time, too. I mentioned Hannah Montana earlier.
Mm-hmm.
What Hannah Montana became for Disney, it was so far outside the scope of anything that they could have ever imagined. And so they pumped out a lot of material like Jonas or Camp Rock. There's another one I'm thinking of that I can't think of. Oh, High School Musical. You know, that this... you're selling albums off of a TV show and making, I mean, billions of dollars off of this whole package. So at the time, they were trying to produce TV shows in the model of Hannah Montana, where they make a superstar out of the show. And so that's kind of what you're saying is exactly what they were, that's literally what they were trying to do. They were looking at music trends at the time and trying to mimic them and package them to children, because who's going to go buy a Jonas Brothers album? I'm not, you know, as a high school senior, but these kids are going to go do it. And they made so much money. So as much as resentment as I have toward, you know, the Jonas Brothers saying that Pizza Girl was a mistake, it's like, yeah, it was a mistake because it was bad, but you were, you know, it wasn't your choice. You know, it wasn't their choice to make that song, you know.
And also, like, you know, I'll say back to the Hot Hot Heat example, right? Like, Bandages is not a song. It's a catchy, catchy song.
Yeah.
Not a song with subject matter for kids.
Right.
I mean, just the title of the song is Bandages. So you can think what that might be about. Yeah.
Any direction. It's probably just not.
Any direction, not maybe not appropriate when the kids start reading the lyrics. Now, but a parent will buy a Jonas Brothers album for their kid because they feel safe with the Disney logo on there. Now, I imagine this Jonas fan in 2009. Hitting 2014 and then discovering a 2002, 2003 album from Hot Hot Heat or The Bravery and going like, oh, I love this classic indie rock music.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe that was the point all along.
All along.
Jonas was actually the end game for The Bravery.
It's the indie rock we met along the way.
Yes. Rob, can you give me 1 second? Because my cat, I just need just 1 second.
Sheena.
Sorry. Sheena Marie.
Yeah.
She's having a bit of a moment.
Give me
1 second. And I do want to say one more thing just before we move on. And if I can, I'm not going to tangent about it, even though I really want to. There's something interesting that we're talking about here, the correlation between like Sheena being on the show. It's a kid show, a Disney show. They're putting out music. It's definitely marketed towards kids. But then Sheena moves on and she kind of becomes a little more risque.
Mm.
There is a thing happening on YouTube with this YouTuber, Colleen Ballinger, who has a character called, are you familiar with it all?
Miranda, right?
Miranda Sings. where her content is objectively at like now objectively in 2023 not for kids. But at the time, because of the cartoony face and her costuming and some of her gross accent things that she's doing, she has like a speech impediment. None of it is actually should be seen by kids at all, in my opinion, now. But at the time when she was popular, which was around 2009, I believe, is when she started her character, Miranda Sings, you know, there was a little, maybe a little bit of a line blur. Her parents weren't super aware because there was content. And now, maybe even back then, if you pulled up something about Jonas Brothers on YouTube, you would get something like Miranda Sings in your search results. And so you as a parent would equate the two. But for sure, I can say, having just watched a Jonas Brothers episode for my kids, I would feel much better about a post-ep discussion on a Jonas Brothers episode than any Miranda content. And then she recently came out with an apology video song with a ukulele, which is, again, using music and a chord progression, which progression would be a crazy word for like two chords, but whatever. which is, you know, meant to be sing-songy. What she's saying in the song is insane. And she's apologizing for accusations of everything from, like, you know, grooming to being straight up inappropriate, racism, all types of really crazy shit. And I think it's interesting that, you know, Joe Jonas said in this 2019 interview, you know, now looking back on it, you know, the Pizza Girl song's a little weird. And I'm assuming he is referring to the content of the song, the lyrics saying, I fell in love with the pizza girl. Now I eat pizza every day. I was stuck in a box. Now the pizza girl's the one for me. I eat pizza every day. It might sound cheesy, but I wanted her to stay. This is all kind of like, yeah, if we really wanted to go hypercritical, we could say you were being a little obsessive, but that is different.
But I also think that this, sorry to cut you off.
No.
But
no,
I was just going to say that I think that this, like, not, we were talking about, like, not every thing has to be, like, over the top for kids, but, like, this sort of episode, I think, opens the door to making kids understand infatuation. Like, yeah. I think they could have, and I don't think Disney would have done this, but I think they could have really closed the loop if in the, like, wrap-up conversation we will get to, but, right. like, if they would have been like, you know, and you don't know anything about her, you just think she looks good.
Yeah.
And so now you're obsessed. They fall a little bit short of like saying that, but they do bring up the whole point that like, yeah, you're having some obsessive tendencies, which quite frankly, you know, I can only talk about my lived experience, but I think when you are young and like are hitting the big P and your voice is changing and your hair in funny places, like you start realizing like, it's, and when I say funny places, I mean like your ear.
Obviously. Yeah. You know, more nose hairs. Yeah.
Yes, of course. You don't always know, like you're not born with the understanding of how to communicate. Right.
Yeah.
And if your parents don't teach you, like the Jonas parents obviously aren't teaching them.
They were removed.
Yes. You might have a couple of times where you're obsessive and you need a friend like they have in this show to be like, you're going about this all wrong, bro. Like, this is terrible.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, we find out actually the catalyst to the resolution of all of that is that they have the brothers, something called the Jonas Book of Law.
Yes.
Which states that no brother is, if one brother has a crush on a girl, no other brother is allowed to pursue the crushy for the fear of breaking up the incredible bond that they have of being so cool. And then they all look at the camera and do a little, you know.
Yep.
It's so funny. So they have this spoken and written law that the brothers should not that the brothers should not all pursue the same girl. So that is literally spelled out for us. And they don't abide by it, because in the next scene, they are all seemingly getting dressed up to go up to call her and try to woo her. And then they decide, okay, no, we're going to be this is like good guy syndrome times 1,000. You know what? No, she will choose me. She has autonomy. It has choice. And so we are going to absolutely corner her into a situation where she has to make a decision.
And the decision is ultimately going to be one of us.
There is no other option.
Can we talk real quick about what they wear to this like quasi date, this invitation of Maria
coming
over?
Yes, please.
So, and it is weird. It's like they're snap, crackle, and pop. You know, they're a different form of a different Rice Krispie each. Yeah. And Joe Jonas has a purple velvet tuxedo on with a bow tie. Nick has standard suit. He's got the sleeves rolled up because he's a rock star.
Obviously.
But his tie's a little bit floral, maybe of the time a little bit. And then Kevin looks like I have to imagine part of it is like Kevin's the goofy one. So he's got like a vest and an ascot and stuff.
Yes.
But there's also this like level of like, how do we rock starification the ascot? Because you know there has to be like some guy in a local band that actually wore this on stage and looked cool.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
totally.
Or thought he looked cool, rather.
Totally.
And I do think that's like part of the charm of Jonas, though, is that like you can tell the writers of the show, or maybe the costume department, were like, okay, what did we see? Who did we see opening up at the Bottleneck the other day for Franz Ferdinand? And what did they wear? That's what the Jonas Brothers would wear.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you nailed it. Kevin is, in Jonas Brothers lore, the loser of the three. And always just missing the mark. Another great scene in the episode is when they go on these like dreamlike tangents about what they love about Maria, and Joe says something like, oh, her hair that shines like eggplant, and then Nick says, and her perfume that smells like fresh oregano, and then Kevin says, and her perfume that smells like fresh oregano. Oh wait, did you already say that?
Yeah,
that is Kevin. So his whole outfit was very on the nose.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess I kind of skipped ahead a little bit, but like they do this sort of thing where they're like, no, you're gonna ask her out. No, you're gonna what? No, we, and like
we,
you said, we need to have her choose one of us. And so they go to the school, right? And they ask like, what do you, I keep forgetting her name, their friend
Stella and Macy.
Mm-hmm. What she likes in a guy, and she's like, you know, I like a guy to cook. And, you know, I like a guy to sing me a song. And the Jonas Brothers just aren't getting it. Like, oh, cook, so I can make her a bowl of cereal?
So I'm going to possibly commit copyright infringement in front of all of my brothers and acoustically sing a song that we wrote together? Totally.
Yes. But they get back and they don't wear those stupid outfits.
No.
Sheena comes over.
They really, well, speaking of stupid outfits and Sheena, as a woman, the dress that she wore was so tacky. But she, you know, notoriously, and I know we're like, you know, she's supposed to be like kind of demure and like cutesy and pizza girl, but I cannot get over how ugly that dress was.
Is it 2009, though? I wonder. Is it? Okay. So,
yeah, it's, I mean,
at least it fits the time.
It does. So like
it's very
saying,
similar, though, color-wise, to the dress she wears in Femme Fatales. It's not the same dress.
No,
it's the same like color hue.
It is. It is of the late to early 2010s or late aughts.
Yeah, a little bit more form-fitting though in Femme Fatales.
Yeah, when she was wearing clothes, it was totally more form-fitting. Yes. Yes. Like you said, they go to the school. They're asking Stella, like I said, that it was egregious of Joe to be asking his crush how to pursue another girl. And then you have Macy, who's seemingly like fascinated with the all three of them and would take, you know, whatever she can get, kind of like star fucker type vibes, which was very fine with me.
Yeah, very, very much like shoot your shot. Doesn't matter, you know?
And she ends up winning, apparently, so that's good for her. So then we cut back to the firehouse, and the boys are like, all right, we're not gonna, you know, we're gonna ask her out, we're not gonna do anything crazy, but we're not gonna flirt with her.
No.
Okay? We're going to go on our genuine personalities. We're not going to overly pursue her. But if somebody does start to flirt, here's the code word. The phone is ringing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought a great comedic device for the next scene.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was very, very odd, but funny. So then Maria, Sheena, comes over in her red dress. And immediately upon sitting on the couch, and before I get into the plot, we really have to talk. Sheena's acting. She was, in my opinion, made to be a Disney star.
Yes.
Particularly in comparison to her femme fatale acting, which we agreed, you know, I don't want to spoil anything for your episode.
No, well, it's okay.
But we agreed that she did a decent job,
yeah,
kind of.
For sure. Especially in comparison with her fellow actors on the show. And mm-hmm. I think that shows here as well.
Yes. So she comes in. This was great for her. She was charming. And we know now, because of the Peacock extended versions of the reunion, that Allie, who is just a few years younger than me, in her late 20s, never even put together that was Sheena in the episode as a Jonas Brothers fan, which I think is a testament to Sheena's acting skills.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And I like that. That like Sheena can, there's something about, like, I went to school for acting, right? I obviously didn't go into that, but I went for like directing theater school, right? That was my college degree. Nice. And that's why I'm in podcasting now.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And
no offense, sorry.
No, it's none taken. That is exactly the right response there. Kids, don't be fooled by college. I'll put that.
I almost did theater and pivoted. So
yeah.
That was coming from a place of understanding, not of judgment.
Don't worry. I'm judging myself. But the thing is that, like, one of the things you do learn, to not get too highfalutin about it though, is that, like, you're never supposed to out act. Like, there are better actors than some people, but you need to be able to, like, work within the scene that you're in and the type of thing you're doing. And that's why when you see people like going way over the top, it's like, even if they are doing a good job, like, you're going to stand out in a negative way if you can't act within the type of thing you're doing.
Yeah.
And so you saying that Sheena's built for Disney, it's like, she's built for Disney. She's built for, you know, late night Skinamax stuff. She's built for reality TV. Like, anything she goes into and do, she can play the part.
Yeah.
And that, I think, says a lot. And she'll even say it in that, like, first season of Vanderpump Rules, like, I'm not a singer, I'm a performer. I'm not an actor, I'm a performer. And it's like, yeah, you can fit the mold.
And I think I love that you brought that up, because this is like one of her personal critiques that she gets all the time, is that, like, she's a flip-flopper. She's never on anyone's side. She's never, like, heavily loyal to anyone. But to me, as a former theater person, mm-hmm. I have always read her, what some may call wishy-washiness, as conforming to her environment. She always fits exactly what is needed in that environment at that time, whether that is objectively a betrayal of whatever other relationship she has. Like, she's surviving. And she's doing the best she can in every single situation in a really, to me, authentic way, because I think that above all, Sheena is focused about on Sheena. Sheena is about herself, and it really translates into acting.
Can I read you something real quick from a top secret document that I cannot disclose what it is, but I think it speaks to this a little bit.
Is it the Jonas Book of Law?
It is. We'll call it the Jonas Book of Reality TV Law.
Totally.
Whatever people, this is where the quote's coming from. Whatever people on this cast think at any moment means nothing. A new story will begin with a new season, and everyone will turn up to 11 as they prepare for shooting. And as soon as dollar signs start shining, they don't stand by their convictions. It's just fact. The show is for entertainment purposes, but don't let the loudest projectors on the cast fool you. They'll do whatever it takes to not have a desk job.
Yeah.
And to me, that speaks to like the validity of Sheena being able to like move within that range.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Was that, wait, can you really not say what that was a quote from?
I can't, but I will tell you after the recording is over.
I cannot wait. Okay, great.
Yeah.
But it's also true because there's also this, not to get too Vanderpump Rules heavy on this Jonas Brothers episode, but there's a lot of speculation about, you know, if Raquel comes back, who's going to film with Raquel? And on Reddit, there's this conversation that's like, well, you know, Sheena will because Sheena's not loyal to anybody. And I'm like, no. Everybody who wants a paycheck will film with Raquel, and maybe Ariana won't, because Ariana is getting gigs outside of the show and has a whole thing that she can ride on. So, and also part of her character right now, if I, you know, want to use that word for these reality stars, but she, it wouldn't make sense necessarily for her to film with Raquel like a one-on-one, and she can probably has some sort of leverage where if she chose not to, fine. Sheena, Lala, James, Schwartz, Charlie, all of them have a reason to film, and they will do it to create content, to make a story. And so I really do hate this idea that, you know, Sheena is so disloyal that she'll film. No. All of them will do that if it comes down to it. Because it's for the paycheck.
And also human nature that, like, you can hate someone with a fiery passion in May and by September still not like them, but not have so much of a fiery passion that you won't, like, be in the same room with them. You know, that's it's just the nature of like shit wears off, you know? Yeah. So like when people want to not like someone on that cast, they're going to point out everything that supports their argument, but forget every other aspect of another person that they like.
Yeah.
It does the same thing. It's like, none of these people are fucking role models. Like, give it a break. You know, we can like what we like, but like You're fooling yourself to think that like one person is better or worse than another.
But I also think that they know that a huge part of reality television is storytelling.
Yes.
And a lot of the issues, for example, with Real Housewives of Beverly Hills for the past couple of years has been maybe the quiet part not being said out loud.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of undercurrent going on with some of these shows that if you're trying to tell a story, you need to have that out there and presented to the viewers so that we can understand what you're trying to portray to us. How are we going to fully understand, you know, Raquel's role or her consequences or her growth or whatever, if we don't have someone there to confront her about it and to speak about it on camera? Because we've seen with the alleged punch incident, we don't know what happened. And I understand it's probably best that we don't.
Sure.
But for storytelling when it came to the reunion and this whole murkiness about like what Sandoval heard and what Ariana heard and what Sheena experienced and whether or not that, you know, someone has to put this woman on camera and say, I felt this way because, and not to be too much of a Sheena stan because people hate that, but maybe most effective scene in the finale was Sheena's conversation with Sandoval because she was narrating the situation, confronting him, and being really vulnerable. And that's what you need for a good show.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just the fact of the matter, and storytelling is storytelling, whether it's Jonas or VPR.
Truly. And so to wrap up the episode, and speaking of great, you know, storytelling, we get Sheena on the couch and Kevin Jonas whips out the equivalent of Pop's cereal to woo her. Yes. And Joe is outwardly flirting and he makes a comment that, again, I couldn't help myself when he said, do you like motorized vehicles? Because you would look great in my sidecar. And I was like, wow, the Schwartz and Sandoval love story for the ages. Yes. and go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, and I just love that, like, this like moves to this like scene where they're like, well, but wait, if you don't want to be with us, we can share you. And that's essentially where she gets her like autonomy. She's like, ew, I'm out of here. Like,
now fool. I want to ask you, what do you think Sheena, because in the scene, the boys are fighting over her and, yeah, we can share you or who do you like more, whatever. And Sheena goes, all of this attention is kind of really overwhelming. And I was wondering, would Sheena Marie feel like all of the attention of people fighting over her was overwhelming? Or do you think she might stay a couple minutes just see how things played out?
I think she'd probably see how it played out just for the story. You know, I think a normal human being, not that she's not normal, but I think someone who's not used to being on camera would have more of the reaction that the character Maria has. But I think a Sheena would be like, how's this gonna, what's the end game here? Because I want to see it.
So she says to them, you know, this is too much. I'm going to go home. Never actually indicates any romantic interest in any of them whatsoever. Never even implies that she was understanding particularly that there was romantic interest. And then exit stage left, right?
Yes.
And so then the brothers are, Kevin says, who's up for Chinese food? Which I just thought was fun. Kevin's funny. I don't know. Yeah. Whatever. You know what? The show's funny. I don't care.
He's
a goofy boy. So the episode closes out with them all with their tailor, Stella, who, as you noted earlier, is listening to them go on and on about still Maria. And she goes, let me ask you a question. What color are Maria's eyes? I found this funny because brown is the answer, I think. Maybe you could make an argument for Hazel. But in season 4, Sheena notoriously wore bright blue contacts that were terrifying.
Jarring, for sure.
They were jarring.
They were, I mean, I felt like I was falling under her spell. Like the Jonas Brothers did to the pizza girl.
They did. And so did I. So it was funny that she would ask what color are her eyes when Sheena apparently has some sort of fixation or curiosity about that. And so then she asks a few more questions and the guys realize they actually don't know a damn thing about her.
They know she's got two. She's got two.
Kevin says, I'm pretty sure she had two. Again, comedic genius over there.
Yes.
And then they realize, you know what? The Jonas Book of Law is more important than some girl. And they will never again be competitive over another girl. However, they are very competitive in nature. So they start arguing about who's like more willing to be less competitive. And that is pretty much the episode.
Stella does order juice, though.
Oh, and then at the end, Stella orders juice from some juice place, and we are brought back to the whole device of the entire thing, which was people like eye candy.
I got to tell you, Disney would never do it, but they should have had Sheena as the juice delivery person.
Oh, my
too.
God.
And Stella would be like obsessed with her that way.
She has the range.
Yeah.
She has the acting range.
It would have been great.
That would have been great. That would have been really great. Rob, so taking this episode into consideration, and we already touched on it, but, you know, what do you think? Do you think that Sheena, have you ever watched any of the other characters in Vanderpump Rules act in anything? I know that Stassi was on Rat Race and some Queen Bees and Wannabes, and then Lala had some roles. No idea how she got them, but
oh yeah, I have no idea. I did see The Row and covered that with my buddy Bill for an episode. That was bad,
okay.
But Lala was actually maybe one of the better actors in it, surprisingly
okay.
so. But she was just playing Lala. You know, there wasn't really much range to the character. I had seen the actual short film, The Riven Destiny, that Sandoval.
Christians?
No, Sandoval was the in season 5 when he's like, "Hey, Commander, we're glad to see you back," and he can't get the lines right the whole time. That short film
you
is
saw
actually,
the actual thing.
The short film, yeah, it's available on like Vimeo and YouTube. The guy who made it, Rob Federick, is actually very talented, and the short film is a great little sci-fi romp. Peter's brother actually plays the main character in it, but Sandoval, like, I think they ended up, I don't quote me on this, but I think they ended up using a voiceover because Sandoval kept screwing up the lines.
Oh my God.
I've watched trailers for The Pit and the Pendulum that Sandoval is in, which just looks like it is another version of like a femme fatales. Like, it looks a little too horny as an adaptation to Hitting the Pendulum. There's just a lot of shirtless people in the trailer.
Yeah.
So, not sure if that's in the script. And so I would have to say that probably between everyone I have seen, Lala is just under Sheena's acting ability.
Okay. I can stomach that, I think.
Although I do really want to see Ariana in Buying Back My Daughter this fall.
My God, I can't wait to see Ariana's acting. You know, she was also in a show. I can't remember the name of it now, but it was short-lived, and it was kind of like a Ocean's 11 type situation. And where these, you know, they sell, I think, feet pics. A group of women sell feet pics, no shit, to make enough money.
And what's this so I make sure not to go to it? What is it? No.
I can't remember the name of it, but if you look it up, because when I was doing research for Femme Fatales, there was a Reddit post that was like, actually, they've all been in like quasi porn. And so the thing that you were talking about with Sandoval came up. Stassi did like a boudoir shoot that was not acting, but whatever.
Sure.
And then Ariana was in this heist show that I want to say maybe Amazon, but I could be wrong. And it actually kind of looked like...
The Dead Want Women? I'm looking at her IMDb right now. I guess this would have to be before 2011, right?
Yeah. It was a while back.
So it looks like we've got Swing Vote, What Side Are You On, 2008.
Uh-huh.
The College Humor Show, which we knew about. Uh-huh. Working It Out, and she's Bar Girl Number One. Killer Eye, Halloween Haunt. She plays Catalina.
No.
Love Finder, which is a TV movie. The Dead Want Women. God, I got to go watch all of these. Blue Residence, which seems like a sorority movie.
Uh-huh.
Reparations, Single Siblings, dad's...
Was it Working It Out, maybe?
Working... It has to be. I feel like the cover of this movie... Let's look at the term. Dustin seems to be living the happy life of a swinging NYC bachelor. By day, he works as a personal trainer. By night, he hangs out with his boys from the gym. And every spare moment seems more than dedicated to staying in peak physical condition. After a gym member, Becky, the type... Oh, God, this is too long. This is bad.
Wait, hold on. I think it's Dirty Dealing. But
Dirty Dealing.
The only thing she's credited in is Dirty Dealing 3D, which looks like maybe a sequel to the plot of the thing that I saw. I'll have to DM you when
Michael
I find it
Madsen
out.
Is in Dirty Dealing 3D. This is wild. Okay, send it to me. I'm watching all of them.
I think it maybe is Dirty Dealing. Oh my God. It looks ridiculous. I'll find it and I'll send it to you.
A group of sexy blackjack dealers, the Sin Pit Pussycats, plot to rob a Vegas casino to get revenge against the shady owner who wronged them, Michael Madsen. Michael Madsen.
Yes, it was. It was the Michael. Yes, it was that. It was Michael Madsen.
Reservoir Dogs.
Yes. Like. Yeah. It was Michael Madsen's film. But it wasn't that one in 2018. It was before. It was way before 2018. So the 3D must be some sort of like remake or something.
Yeah, they probably just like found a way to... Because there is a regular Dirty Dealing, which is the same movie. Yeah. So they probably just put 3D at the front, did something weird, and then reissued it to save a copyright, maybe.
Well, I'm hoping that her Lifetime movie is a little bit better than...
Although we hate
3D.
To see Ariana as a cop, but, you know.
Well, you know, you got to do what you have to do.
Yeah, it's true.
I think that's the lesson that we've learned from this Jonas Brothers episode, at least.
That is so true. And wear ascots.
Oh, my God. Do you have any final thoughts about the episode or about Jonas?
I just want to say that, like, the opening theme song to Jonas hit hard and was way catchier than I thought it was going to be. And I'm not ashamed to say that it might go on a playlist or two in the future.
Hell yeah. They are revolutionary.
They truly are.
They really are. Rob, tell everybody where they can find you, your podcast. Please plug your Patreon, if for nothing else.
Of course. I have a podcast called Vanderpump Robs. It is a podcast about the Vanderpump Rules universe. So sometimes we'll cover episodes. When there's a new season, we'll always cover the new seasons. Sometimes we'll cover things like Femme Fatales. That one is behind the Patreon, which you can find patreon.com/VanderpumpRobs. And it is raunchy. But there's other times where we'll do episodes where we'll follow the Tom Schwartz timeline, the Katie Maloney timeline. We'll kind of see what works, what doesn't, why the show is entertaining. But, you know, also I call it universe because I might watch an episode of Melrose Place every now and again, because that just feels like Vanderpump. Yeah. I'll watch an episode of Baywatch Nights that Lisa Vanderpump starred in. You know, it's a sandbox of all things Hollywood, primarily centering around Vanderpump Rules. And I appreciate anyone who wants to listen to the free episodes, but if you got an extra $5, I think you will enjoy the Patreon, especially the episode you joined me on, Emily.
Thank you. And as a consumer, as a patron of Rob's, I have to co-sign on, if you can, if you have the $5 a month, it is really, he has had some great guests, some great insight and concepts into every episode that he puts into. It is really, really fun. So I have to say, join that Patreon, follow his podcast, follow him on Instagram. And you can do the same for me at Who TF Knows Emily Rose on Instagram, at Who TF Knows Emily Rose, WTFK Emily Rose on Twitter. You can follow my personal at Emily Agogo. And man, I think that's about it. Rob, thank you so much for joining me. And thank you all for listening. And we will talk to you guys later. Bye-bye. Wind up your waist now. Wind up your waist.
Wind up your waist now, wind up your waist. Yeah, you know I love it when you wind up your waist. Tell me what you want.